your noontime look at the financial world. What's trending in Chicago business? The midday numbers. John has the Wintrust Business Lunch now.
Money, 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 money.
All right, let's get rolling on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's what we're covering today. Sponsored by Thatcher Oaks Commercial Awnings. Covering Chicagoland businesses for 40 years. At 12:09, so on the Business Lunch today, Jared Dillian visits with us again, the best-selling financial author, who talks about how much gold you should have in your portfolio in these volatile times. He asks the question, is building a house worth it? He'll give you his answer. We'll talk about small businesses, too. How much insurance these days should your small business have, and how expensive is that getting? We'll talk about advertising your business, too, in this hour. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jared Dillian is on, the best-selling financial author. No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life is his book, a regular guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Jared. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You are interested in gold. How much gold should we have? What are you thinking about gold as an investment right now?
Well, I think the right amount of gold for somebody to have is 20% of their portfolio. And a lot of people think that is nuts. A lot of people have no gold, or if they do, that's 2% or 5%. 20% seems like a lot. I think having 80% of your money in stocks is also bonkers. But 20% is the right amount. What gold does is when you add gold to a portfolio, it reduces its volatility because it is not well correlated to any other asset class. So whenever you add an asset to a portfolio that's not correlated or negatively correlated to anything else, it brings down the volatility and it reduces the risk.
Well, I think when people think about their portfolios, it's not 20% gold, 80% stocks. It's 60% stocks and 40% bonds or cash and maybe a little something else, which might include gold. Let me put it this way. To what degree should somebody be in equities?
Well, you mentioned the 60-40 portfolio, and that's what a lot of people have. The problem with the 60-40 portfolio is that you're not really diversified, okay? So, first of all, when people invest in stocks, they buy an index fund, and the index fund has 500 stocks, and they say, well, I own 500 stocks, so I'm diversified. But you're really not, because 100 million people have the same trade on. Then you add bonds, which are also financial assets. Stocks and bonds are financial assets. So there are long periods of time where bonds are actually correlated with stocks, and you don't get those benefits of diversification. What you need to do is add hard assets like commodities, gold, real estate, stuff like that. That tends to, number one, bring down your risk, and number two, immunize you from increases in inflation.
Immunizes you from increases in inflation. So why? Because gold will outstrip inflation? I mean, how does it do that? We need gold to appreciate, right?
Yeah, over long periods of time, when inflation is high, gold generally does pretty well. And this is, you know, it's a small sample size. It goes back to the 1970s. But during periods of high inflation, gold has done pretty well. And also real estate. I want to bring up real estate. A lot of people have exposure to real estate through their own house, which is great. If you don't have exposure to real estate through your house, then what you can do is buy a publicly traded REIT, a real estate investment trust, which gives you exposure to things like apartments and offices and malls and stuff like that. But you have to have some exposure to real estate as well.
So is this more about you being down on the markets, though? Or are you that convinced that gold is always a good investment, regardless of where we are, say, in the sort of economic trend of the time?
No, it's definitely not an expression of pessimism on the stock market or the economy. It's not that at all. Really, what it's about is achieving a level of diversification that you cannot get just through the stock market alone. Okay. Like if you are fully, let's say you're 100% invested in the stock market, when you invest in an index, not only do you get the returns of the index, you get the volatility of the index. The S&P 500 is pretty volatile. It moves around 15 to 20% a year. You don't like that kind of volatility, okay? Because volatility makes people make stupid decisions.
But I'm looking at the chart on gold. In 1980, gold was $2,300 an ounce. By the year 2000, it had pretty much gone straight down to $540 an ounce, $500 an ounce. Since then, the last two decades, gold has gone quite nicely up.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, like if you look at gold from an inflation-adjusted standpoint, if you adjust the gold price for inflation, even at $2,400 an ounce right now, it's still below where it was in the early 1980s when it was at $800 an ounce. Hmm. That's, you know, so I actually think gold is pretty cheap right here, at least in historical terms.
Really? So you think that gold is going to continue to appreciate? It certainly has been. You like gold right now.
Well, you know, I've included gold in my portfolio as of 2005. That's really when I first started building a position. So I've had it for 18 years. And my thesis at the time was not so much that I was going to trade it or, you know, get rich or, you know, day trade it or flip it for a couple of bucks, but that gold would outperform stocks over any reasonable length of time. And it actually has. If you go back to 2000, when gold was at $260 an ounce, it has outperformed the stock market a lot since then. And real estate has actually outperformed the stock market as well since the year 2000.
Jared Dillian, best-selling author. His latest, No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life, is on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He thinks you should be in gold. He thinks you should be in gold to 20%. Wow, you said. Is that for everybody, or is there certain thresholds? Like, well, you need to have had so much money in the market or so much money in bonds or maybe a time horizon. You need to be of a certain age. What about that, Jared?
So I actually do think it's for everybody. I think it's for everybody of any income or wealth level. So in the book, in No Worries, I talk about a portfolio which I created called the Awesome Portfolio. And the Awesome Portfolio is 20% stocks, 20% bonds, 20% cash, 20% gold, and 20% real estate. And this portfolio over time has given you just a little bit less than the return of the stock market, but with half the volatility, right? So volatility is the enemy. Volatility makes us make dumb decisions with our money, and it causes us to experience emotions. We get very happy when the market goes up. We get very sad when the market goes down. We get scared. We might liquidate our portfolio when the market goes down. The idea is to eliminate volatility to the best that you can. And by using all these different asset classes, you can achieve that.
When you say real estate and gold, do you want me to be in an ETF or do you want me to hold gold bars? Do you want me to buy lots of land? How do I invest in gold and real estate?
So for gold, a lot of people do like to buy physical precious metals. But I tend to disapprove of that. The transactions costs are very high. You have to store it. There's a risk of losing it or getting robbed or a whole bunch of things. So it's a lot easier just to buy an ETF. And in terms of real estate, you can use the equity in your house as your real estate allocation. And if you don't have a house, you can buy a real estate investment trust that's listed on the stock exchange.
So get a REIT and then put 20. Boy, that just sounds crazy to me to only be 20% in equities.
Yeah, but it works. That's the amazing thing. Like it does sound crazy, but it absolutely works. Think about this. You have this portfolio that only has 20% equities, and it has 20% in cash that is uninvested, and this portfolio only returns 1% less than the stock market.
I guess so, but your 20% of cash are subject to inflation, and the 20% in equities have been missing this ride on the market. I mean, 20% went up, but maybe another 40% could have taken the ride up.
So I've studied this portfolio a lot, and what I determined was that about 40% of the time, if you have the Awesome Portfolio, you will be sad because you will be underperforming the stock market by 10% or more. But 20% of the time, you're going to be very, very happy because you're outperforming the stock market by 10% or more. Just as an example, during the financial crisis in 2008, the stock market was down 38% that year. The awesome portfolio was down 9%. So it really saves you in the bad times.
Jared Dillian is the best-selling financial author. His latest is No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life. We're out of time today. We'll tell more of your stories next time, Jared. It's nice to talk to you.
Thanks, John.
It is Small Business Month. If you're a small business man or woman, you would remind me that every month is Small Business Month. But let's talk a little bit about that with Jeff Kroger, who is the president of Insurion. Jeff, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you all provide insurance for small businesses, right?
That's right. That's actually all we do. We're the largest independent agency in the United States that only sells small business insurance, property and casualty.
Property and casualty. And you're not a broker. It's your assets. That is, you're the company, right?
No, we actually are the broker. We are part of Hub International, both headquartered in Chicago. But we are a broker, so we partner with every major national insurance carrier in the property and casualty space and deliver those policies to small business owners.
Insurance for homeowners has sure gone up. For car owners, it's gone up. Are small businesses seeing rises in their insurance rates as well?
It's definitely what we would call a harder market, so rates have increased. In certain parts of the market, certainly in property insurance in different areas of the country, others in the liability space. But I wouldn't say it's in extreme levels.
Oh, and what's driving that? Because it seems like it's been weather-related for homeowners in Florida and California, but in Iowa and places, too, where you've got wind events as well. What's driving the cost? Plus, materials and costs are higher these days as well. What's driving small business insurance?
It's truly the exact same thing. So in the property side, if there's a catastrophic event in Florida or in Iowa, as you mentioned, and it impacts an entire community, the businesses in the community, just like the homes in the community, are going to suffer losses on the property side of things. Yeah. Inflation since the pandemic is also leading to the material costs.
Yeah. Are the then considerations the same? That is, if I'm a small business owner, am I rethinking about my premium or my deductibles? What are people doing about costs? What kinds of insurance are you recommending?
That's a great question. We do see, you know, when we talk about small business is 99% of the United States economy. So one small business might be one individual landscaper versus somebody who's got a decent size, you know, metal goods manufacturing facility in Chicago. If you're the metal goods manufacturing facility, you might drop limits of coverage. You may sell a building. You may divest of certain vehicles. And you may obviously work with your broker to try to get coverage that can suit your needs, but maybe not is entirely what you should have, but what suits you for the time being. The more unfortunate thing that we tend to see on our side, where we do insure many individuals, so you might have a wedding consultant, for example, who just decides not to have insurance and drops the coverage entirely. Actually, about 30% of the market in small business is small business owners who truly don't carry coverage at all. And we see that more and more in these types of economic times.
I wonder what that means then to me. Should I do business with them, or how risky is it for them then? They could lose their business if they get sued or suffer some loss, right?
100%. I just had some flooring done in my house, and I can't help myself, right? But I definitely require to see a certificate before I'd have anybody work on anything of substance for me personally, just to make sure that they're covered. And if they don't have coverage, then I'm not going to want to work with them. So we would always advise everyone to carry coverage, certainly to make sure they can maintain their livelihoods.
What kinds of insurance are these businesses supposed to have?
So if you're a small business, all the way up to the one I mentioned, like in manufacturing, really, you know, we're an insurance brokerage. We'd say everything, but we would definitely carry liability insurance, general liability insurance, property insurance. Even if you don't have a property, a physical location, if you are working in a building, if you have equipment in the back of your truck, that should be insured. Workers' compensation, I feel like everybody knows what workers' compensation is, but oftentimes if you've got a one or two man operation, you might not carry that. You probably carry some level of independent health insurance. If you get injured on the job, if you're carrying workers' compensation insurance, then you have unlimited health insurance, right, to cover those costs. So yeah, we actively promote that it, no matter what you do, if it's just you, you should also have workers' comp. And then lastly, cyber insurance is a very hot topic in the marketplace in general. I feel like in the news at large, you hear about large attacks on bigger companies, ransomware attacks, et cetera. But the overwhelming majority of the claims are in small business. Any small business who's got personally identifiable information for a client is at risk of having some sort of data breach, maybe not cyber, but a breach in data, which can carry first-party liability implications, let alone being sued on third-party. And ransomware attacks, we work for a large company now at Hub. We have an unbelievable program at Hub to report these attacks, but ransomware attacks on small businesses where bank accounts are seized and they're held hostage are through the roof.
Yeah, well, we've had some of those, notably in the Chicago area lately, but I didn't know you could insure against that. I mean, so in the case of ransomware, if they're saying you'll lose all your files, we'll delete everything unless you give us $1 million, the insurance company would pay the $1 million?
I'm not going to speak on each individual insurance carrier and their offerings, but I will say that there is a limit of coverage that could be provided in certain packages to defend against that.
Makes the maybe decision whether or not to reward the pirates, if you will, a little more complicated, because I think generally people say you shouldn't pay them, but if they've got your stuff, and by the way, if you then pay them, there's no guarantee that in fact they'll release the documents or the files back to you, but that's your only hope. And I think the general fear or feeling is not to cooperate. We have to stop rewarding this sort of piracy. But then again, if they've got a hospital's worth of medical files, you feel like you've got to deal with them. What a tough choice, huh?
Certainly, but I would say most of, you know, any credible carrier that is working in the cyberspace, outside of coverage, what you tend to get is their expertise in the way of handling those situations, right? So you actually have someone to call outside of just legal counsel, but to actually try to mitigate any situation that might arise.
Well, is the insurance then for expertise, as you say, or say in the case of some malware that just compromises your business and now you suffer a loss, would an insurer write a check to help compensate one of their clients?
Again, all of the packages that they offer differ. And certainly, you know, in insurance for the most part, there's a whatever you'd like to insure can probably be insured depending on how much you're willing to pay.
Yeah, sure, sure. It's a calculation, isn't it? Insurion.com is where you can go to find out more. But so workers' comp, cyber insurance, pandemic insurance. I've got to go, but what's pandemic insurance?
Yeah, I saw this on our notes before the call. Pandemic insurance, as far as I know, does not exist. So I will say that. I would advise every small business owner to make sure they have as much business interruption coverage that they can possibly find. But I do not know, and I'm not advocating or pushing pandemic insurance at this time.
Well, that's the de facto version of it, I suppose. Jeff Kroger is the president at Insurion. That's with an E at the end. That is Insurion, Insurion.com. Really interesting, Jeff. Very helpful on Small Business Month. Thanks for helping us today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
You bet. 12:45, more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The business being travel, as we're often running into the Memorial Day holiday weekend. A survey by Gas Buddy shows 76% of Americans will be on the road this weekend, an increase of 18% from last year. AAA expects 44 million Americans to travel more than 50 miles from home, and it's estimated more people will be on the road and in the air this weekend than we've seen in nearly 20 years. Gas prices around Chicago won't work in your favor, though. Problems at refineries in Whiting, Indiana, and Joliet caused prices at the pump to rise as much as 70 cents in the last week. If you're interested in ordering Jeep's first all-electric vehicle, you can make a reservation starting May 31st. The new Wagoneer S features an estimated range of 300 miles on a charge with 600 horsepower. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
We mentioned a little while ago that May is Small Business Month. Tina Didano is the founder of a Facebook group that is all about advertising for small businesses. Small Business Advertising Illinois. Hey, Tina, you're on WGN. Welcome.
Hi, I'm honored. Thank you.
So this is maybe what, in this day and age, the equivalent of the Yellow Pages for small businesses?
I would think it is, but better. Facebook has been a game changer for, you know, just being a great platform for advertising or reaching out, finding businesses better than the Yellow Pages.
Funny, I remember I'm old enough to know you'd get the phone book and sometimes a separate book, the Yellow Pages, sometimes the back half of your phone book, and it would have the businesses listed there and you'd look up plumber or beautician, whatever it is you needed. Is yours organized the same way?
It is not organized in that fashion, but I believe you can do a search and find what you are looking for. And with Facebook, people can do immediate reviews. So you will have firsthand experience. With the Yellow Pages did not offer that, of course.
That's true.
So this is much better, I feel, in that way. And in reading into that, you also have to understand that somebody might have had a bad experience, but it won't be like that every time.
So you are, I guess, any small business, who joins your small business page? Do they have to qualify in some fashion?
They have to. I have another admin who looks into all of that for me to make sure that they are legitimate businesses, and he tries to encourage them to join with their business page so that it would be easier to find for people to just click on their page and read about them.
So one of our guests a little while ago said something like 99%+ of businesses in America are technically small businesses. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is, and they don't have a platform for any kind of free advertising, and the larger companies, of course, have commercials and ads and billboards and you name it, but small businesses usually can't afford to do all of that. So I started this so that they can have that platform to reach out and everyone can look them up and find them that way. It's all of Illinois.
So I know that I know that you've got about 8,000 people on there now. Is the Facebook group Small Business Advertising Illinois?
Yes, that's it. Mm-hmm.
And give me just an example of the breadth of that. I mean, like, what kinds of businesses do you have on there?
Oh, you name it. There is there's plumbers, electricians, HVAC, pool, you know, like swimming pool, lawn care, home improvements, photographers, child care, I say electricians, restaurants, et cetera. It's all of it.
So if I go on there and I need one of those services, I can see, like on a Facebook page, what they're up to, huh?
You can, and it's public, so I believe anyone can see it and find it that way.
Good to know. Tina Didano is the founder of a Facebook group, Small Business Advertising Illinois. It's Small Business Month. Tina, nice to talk to you. Thanks for the heads up.
Thank you for having me.